And I think the hardest thing is that like football games, basketball games, baseball games, they start at 8 o'clock out here.
Yeah, that's
Like,
stupid. That's terrible.
that's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. That's horrible. And I was talking to my coworkers about this, and they're all like, yeah, you just have to. It's like, I said, my mom will stay up till 1 a.m. to watch the Knicks game. Like, I'm like, bro, what? Nah, dude.
That's
Nah, man.
crazy.
I can't live out here, bro. I can't. I gotta go
That's
home.
crazy.
I gotta go home. I can't live out here long term. Like, what? Why? I can never watch a doubleheader. I'll never watch a doubleheader out here on
So
TNT. Like, never.
it's not the cold that's getting you. It's the availability of sports.
Yes, bro. It's the availability of sports. Like, how am I gonna watch these football games and I'm dead tired, and then I gotta wake up the next morning and go to work? Like, that's the thing that's gonna get me. Plus, I really need a TV in here. I don't got a TV. I'm just watching on my laptop. It is what it is, but we'll survive for the next 3 months. But let's get into it, bro. I'm Joshua Potts, Mr. Possible, always with the brother with the same mother, Aaron Potts, super hot Potts. And you're watching and listening to your favorite Two Black Runners every single
Two Black, back at y'all again, starting off the new year strong with another podcast. Man, Joshua just complained about that New York, man.
Trying to
cold
watch
out
these
there, bro. It's cold all over the world right now. It's negatives in most places right now, except here in California.
Yeah, what is it in Santa Barbara?
You don't even want to know, bro. It's like a high of 67, 68, bro. Like, I was running yesterday. I did one of my longest run of my training cycle for this marathon, ran 15, and I posted a picture afterwards, and one of my friends, Kyle Brady, he works at Naperville Running Company, he hit me up, and he's like, dude, it's negative 25 over here right now, man. And I'm like, man, he went and ran. Shout out to him, because I saw he posted on Strava, he went on a run. Shout out to him. But shout out, yeah, my friend Raj Panu. You know Raj. This, if you guys don't know Raj, he's an ultra marathoner for Hoka, one of the only Indian dudes out here doing it. This guy went on a run. It was like negative two, and then it warmed up to 1 degrees.
What?
I'm like, I just feel blessed and highly favored to live where I live, because you're not gonna catch me outside. You ain't gonna catch me outside under 10. You know.
Maybe under 10's insane. Under 10's insane. Under 15. Under 20. Why would I be outside?
You got to get that working. He went on a 20 miler at 1 degrees. He's gonna bro, carry just, the boats.
Just move, bro. Like, just move. I don't know. Somewhere. You gotta move. I don't. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous, bro. Like, really ridiculous. But the plus side for being out here and working at the Armory is that I get to see some really cool events, Aaron. Like, it was pretty dope this past weekend. We had HBCU Showcase, where we saw some historically Black colleges that ran at the Armory, and it was really like an event, bro. Like, we had the Howard Marching Band out there showtime. Like, they tore it up. We had the Alphas from Norfolk. They were stepping, the step team, they tore it up. You feel me? And then we had the Yard Runners, who's like, they're like a Nike representatives for HBCUs. They brought out Kayla White, who went to North Carolina A&T and now a pro in the 200 meters. She was just in the world championships. And they brought out Lady London, a rapper here in New York, who went to an HBCU.
Hey, that's dope.
See you as well. And they had like an after party afterwards. She performed, and like, there's a lot of dancing. Like, it was dope. Fast time. It was a cool experience, bro.
No, I saw the clips. I saw the clips on Instagram of some of the things that was happening. It seemed like it was popping in there. Was there a lot of kids at the meet too? And do they learn about HBCUs or like how to apply and stuff like that while they're at the meet or something?
Nah, bro, there was like a full-on college fair like during the meet was happening. So there was like high schoolers that got the race as well during the time. And like, I think they had like a 4x2, a 4x4, maybe a 600 and like a mile. I don't know, something like that. And then there was a college fair with like six HBCUs. I think it was like West Virginia State, Houston State, and in Austin, Texas, and then Copen and some like two other ones that were there. So yeah, it was really, oh, I think it was Winston-Salem. Winston-Salem was the other one from North Carolina, was also there too. So really like a dope opportunity just like for exposure for the kids, and then also just for the HBCU athletes. Like a lot of these people are from like the South or from the South or just never been to New York. And it's like the only time they get to go to New York, and like to just have that opportunity as a team is special. A lot of people, they don't get to run in the Armory every single day, and like to get that opportunity is pretty dope.
Man, that would be sick if we had something like that on the West Coast. I feel like a lot of HBCUs, they're either in the South or they're somewhere in like that Northeast area. And yeah, I feel like a lot of West Coast kids, like that's a big move. Like if you're from the West Coast and you move out to like Mississippi or North Carolina, or you go to Hampton, like that's a big move to make at 18. So I wish I would have had just a little bit more exposure to HBCUs when I was in school. Cause I remember Grambling's at HBCU, right? And I think they did want to talk to me. I remember dad bringing it up, but I was like, dang, I'm not trying to move all the way over there. But if I would have got to go on a visit or something, or if they, maybe if there was like a track meet that they were at or something out here, I think that would have made a difference for sure. I'm not saying, I don't know 100% would want to go there, but I always get jealous when I see it now, or when I think about Stomp to the Yard and stuff like that. It seems like it'd be a super sick experience to be a part of that.
And like how many HBCUs are traveling to California for a meet? You know, and like there's not a lot of HBCUs traveling to New York City for a meet. So like if there was a type of meet that allowed them to travel to San Diego, you feel me, to like UCSD and got to go to the beach afterwards, like that would be a dope opportunity in itself, just for like that exposure to be all like visiting a whole new place that they don't get to see all the time. You know what I mean? Like,
you're right. I don't think I've
I don't think I've seen an HBCU at Mount SAC. I've never seen an HBCU at Mount SAC or UCSD or...
I don't remember competing against people at HBCUs when I was in school. I mean, most of our meets were going to be in California. There was a decent amount of meets that I traveled to outside of the state. Went to UW every single year. The furthest I went was to Michigan, Grand Valley State. So there may have been some there. I don't know. Maybe I didn't notice, but yeah, to your point, I don't remember competing against any HBCUs when I was in college. So that is interesting.
Yeah, it would be a super dope opportunity. But yeah, HBCU Showcase was dope. Officials Hall of Fame is this week. We had Melrose Trials last week too, which was pretty exciting. Like some US number ones. Johnny Dwyer, that dude went off, ran 6:18, something like that. Like, and like that video went up on Armory account, which is pretty dope. But there's a lot of things that happen around the track, so I think we should just get into it, bro, because there's a lot of stuff to talk about it before we get to our second part of the Sworn Boyle interview series going on for the next 4 weeks. Sworn is going to talk more about how he got into running in high school and everything, but before we get there, we got to talk about some of these amazing performances, because like indoor track is all the way here, Aaron. It's like all the way back. And first up, let's talk about these records that was broken. We had Yusuf Bazama out of Texas. He broke the 1,000 meter NCAA record of a 2:18.10. He broke the record held by Brandon Kidder all the way in 2016. Low-key did it solo dolo, finishing in by himself. Aiden Troutner became the first person to break 4 minutes in a mile at the BYU track indoors, doing it at elevation. And like, amazing feat for him to do that. So many great runners that have went through BYU. Wayne Kaladi, I feel like he always surprises when she's on the road. Ran a 106.25 for fourth place in Houston, breaking the American record in the half marathon. And then we had Angus Nagedich running 28:46, first woman under 29 minutes on any surface. She's insane. Also insane. Sixth place in Budapest at Worlds. This is the 10K as well. So Angus Nagedich went crazy. Aaron, from all those performances, which performance got you most excited for their 2024 season?
Is it Agnes or Agnes?
I'm not sure.
I'm going to say Agnes. I think 28:46, it's a world record. The first woman to go under 29 minutes on the track or anything. If you guys don't know, Elizabeth Gaudet, we know how great she is. She's the world record holder on the track with the 29.01. And you think back to world championships last year and how competitive it was with Gudoff versus Stefan Hassan versus Elizabeth Gaudet. They were so, it was such a competitive race and so compelling to see those top athletes. So now we have Agnes added into the mix where she ran 28.46 on the road. And I wanted to talk about this one specifically because when you look at the comment section on Sidious Mag, when they posted this, all we saw was the shot. Everyone put the shot thing on there. Everyone says she's dirty. She's dirty. Everybody thinks that she's dirty.
Wait, I didn't see this.
Yeah, go look at it. Everyone thinks that she's dirty. So, you know, going through the show notes today, I was like, I'm not familiar, you know, like the Shaq meme. I'm not familiar with your game. You know, I was like, Agnes Nagetich. I'm trying. But I was like, let me look at what she's done recently. And I was like, oh, she actually got six in the 10K at Budapest. She was third in November at World Cross. And in November also, she ran 29.26 on the roads. Now, 29.26 on the roads, like I just told you, Gaudet, Elizabeth Gaudet has the world record at 29.01 on the track. And Agnes ran 29.26 in November. So it is a big jump for sure to run 28.46, but it's not totally out of the blue. She's obviously good off the track with what she's done in cross country. She got six at Worlds in one of the, we can say right now, the women's 10K is the best that it's ever been all time with Elizabeth Gaudet, with Gudoff, Gudoff Segay, and Safanasan, Gudoff Segay, and Elizabeth Gaudet. So it's just, the Africans are going insane from both Kenya and Ethiopia here. So I just wanted to put some respect on Agnes's name, that I think that she's legit and it's going to shake up things at the Olympics with her being able to run that, if she could keep it up.
Nah, that's valid. That's valid. I didn't see those comment sections. I looked at it. I can't confirm. There are some shots in there. There are some people still saying, like, there's people saying as well, like, kudos to her for not, like, seems kind of fishy, but kudos to her for now. I'm like, dang, that's low-key a backhanded compliment, but I guess we'll take that. But, like, that's definitely, like, that's legit. 28.46, that's amazing. First woman to ever do that. It's insane. But honestly, I think I'm just a Wayne Kalati fan because I'm most impressed and I'm most excited for her. The half marathon for the America has been insane so far. Yeah. I recommend y'all go read Jonathan Galt's article recapping the Houston Marathon and just all the festivities that happened there. He kind of details just how much the American record in the U.S. half marathon has changed so much over the past 2 years for the women. Like Kiara D'Amato held it, Sarah Hall held it, Emily Sisson held it, now Wayne Kalati. And like Sisson had it like two times or something. No, D'Amato had it like two times. Like it has been insane. And now Kalati to just get it like this and run a 106 and finish fourth place in such a high caliber field. And I think the biggest thing for me is that like Jonathan Galt was explaining that Kalati's more of a low mileage person. Like she only does 6 days a week, doesn't run on Sundays, and runs about 40 to 50 miles. And she's been running. Yes, bro. I was like, what? And she runs the 10K. And now this Stephen Haas finally convinced her to do higher mileage, like 70, 80 miles. And now she runs this on the roads. So I'm just excited to see what is she going to do on a track now? What is she going to do in the 10K this year? Can she make her first team? And can her first team be the Olympic team? Well, first, like team on the track on like a world stage. Can it be the Olympic team? And I think it can be. I think this can be a proving ground now that she's going to be doing hopefully some more higher mileage that Haas has convinced her to do this. So with these 70, 80 miler legs, what can Kalati really do? Yusuf's also exciting too, because he's low-key on the Bowerman watch list, but Kalati, I want to see her make a team. I really do.
I do. I mean, I 100% agree with you. I'm a Wayne Kalati fan as well. And she's coming out of she was a historic athlete when she was in the NCAA. It's like
in high school too.
She's one of those ones. So right now, she's just in a really tough era with people like Carisha Swizer, with Elise Cranny, Allison Munson, Natasha Rogers. The women's 10K, it's really tough, but she's always one of the people that are going to be competing for that top three. So it's great to see this early on. And Olympic year, everyone always runs faster. We know that. And a lot of people switch teams. A lot of people switch teams, and they're going to have to, you know, I'm sure they know what they're doing, but they're going to have to figure out how to fit that in versus Wayne. She's with the same coach, just building. So maybe this is the time where she finally breaks through that barrier and gets in the top three. Maybe that's what we're going to see this year.
Bro, I'd be hyped. But also it'd be sad too, because someone like Carissa, Natasha, or Alicia,
they're all cool,
or Lisa would have to miss the team too. But I would be hyped to see Wayne get that chance to go. Definitely if she's running fast too, you feel me?
Before we move on, I will say really quickly, Aiden Trouder, 359.20 at altitude. That's huge. I remember years ago, Christian Serratos, when he ran, I don't remember what the time was, but he ran like 402 and they converted to like 353. And everyone was like, no, that's not legit. No way. And then he came out and was running like 352, you know, at sea level. So to be the first person to run 359.20, there's been a lot of people that have tried to run sub four at altitude. You know, I think we saw Luis Grijalva just try to do it last year. That dude just got fourth at Worlds in the 5K. He couldn't do it. So big kudos to Aiden. I'm excited to see what that guy's going to do, because that's impressive. He probably 26 though.
No, it's just, how old is it? Aiden Trotter's not that old. He's not that old. Because he's a year.
No disrespect. Respectfully.
I think he's a year younger than me. Or a year older. So
24.
He's not.
Hey, no disrespect though, man.
He's not that old. But let's stay in that realm of Houston, bro, as we're talking about Wayne Kaladi, because there was a lot of amazing performances from that day. We had Zohair, especially on the men's side. We had Zohair Talbi, who trains here in the U.S., based in Morocco, runs from there. He was a legend on the NAIA scene, and he's actually on the Two Black Runners podcast before the World Championships in 2022. Talbi just ran a 206.39 to win the Houston Marathon. Behind him, we have Patrick Tiernan, who ran 207.45, looking like he's hit the Olympic standard. He's number two all time for Australia. It looks like he's going to be in the Olympic Games in Paris this summer. A great pick of him and Angel at the line. I was happy to see that. And then I think something that was really exciting, Diego Estrada is back in the half marathon, ran a 60.49, first race in a minute, first big race in a minute. And then another notable thing I got to talk about, Galen Rupp. He ran 3 weeks before the trials, 62.37 for 14th place, only 3 weeks away from the trials. Aaron, what was your biggest takeaway from all these performances on the men's side?
Dang. I'm going to start off with the Galen Rupp thing. That's interesting to me. Galen Rupp ran 62.37. That's not great. Like, I'm not saying that's slow or anything, but for Galen Rupp, that's not really that good. He's not looking at his top fitness right now. And I can't remember what he ran at Chicago this year.
It was a little bit off the standard. I think it was like 208, or was it 208 high or 209 low, I believe.
That's not that great for Galen Rupp. He's not looking like the favorite right now. That's interesting. And that opens to Galen Rupp getting beaten by this many people, 14th place at Houston, 3 weeks away from the marathon. Hey man, if I'm a 209 guy, I'm looking my chops right now. Like, come on, I'm about to get that one. I think about it when you think about basketball right now. You know, we seeing this little turn where these younger guys, Chet, Wimby, Shai, they go up against the LeBron Jameses, the KDs, and they're not scared. They're not scared no more. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Galen Rupp at the Olympic trials. You know, I think that's just more anticipation going into it because he's always someone you just expect to be on the team. He's a silver medalist. We know how great he is. One of the best American distance runners of all time. But he's looking beatable right now.
For reference, in 2020, he did the same thing. February 8th, he ran a half marathon, the Sports Mesa half marathon in Arizona. He finished first and he ran 101.19. 3 weeks later, he won the 2020 Olympic trials. 3 weeks before this time, he's running 62. He ran 208.48 at Chicago. So take what you want with that.
I think that he's looking like a wounded animal. And I'm coming for him if I was out there. But, you know, people might not even be as worried as him about him, but they just focus on themselves. But that's interesting to me. And then Zuhair, man, I'm just happy for my boy. That dude came onto the podcast. I feel like we seen his whole come up.
Facts.
Like, we saw this dude when he was NAIA running 10Ks NAIA, but he's competing at a Division One level, running under 28 minutes. Just being one of those guys that is always in it with the pros that a lot of people don't know who his name is, but we recognized and we watched his come up and to look back. He ran the New York Marathon in November and DNF'd. And I remember a post he put up where he was super sad about how he couldn't get through and everything. So to come back just a couple months later and to win one at a 206.39. So I believe this is only the second marathon he's actually completed. Right? Yeah, it's the third one. Second one he actually competed. To run 206.39. And I think about his relationship with the Moroccans out there. He was saying his childhood friends is, what's his name? Bakali.
Bakali, yeah.
Bakali, who's the best steeplechaser in the world. So I know that he sees himself as one of those guys. He grew up with those type of people. So I'm happy for him, 206.39. I really think this is just the beginning of we're going to see of this dude. But a special talent. Excited about it.
No, for sure. Like, I think the biggest takeaway from talking to Talby when we did like 2 years ago is that like his expectation is to be like the best in the world, you know, like because that's what people around him have been. Like, look at the other Moroccans in the 800, like they're competing to be the best in the world. And like he's going to do that exact same thing on the marathon level. And to see him run a 206 on Houston's a fast course too, a faster course. So I'm excited to see, because I think he's a real competitor too. Because when he ran that in Boston, that was a competitive race, and he ran well there. So it's going to be exciting to see what he does at the Olympics. You know, I think he should be selected, and he get the standard. Like he should be selected. But moving on though, let's talk about a little bit back onto the indoor track, bro. UW was this weekend the first time we get to open up the UW track again in Washington, and we saw some amazing performances, Aaron. And in men's 1K, we saw Sam Ellis running a 218, who leads off from On. Another pros made their debut with Craig Engels. He ran a 219 right behind him. Brandon Miller of the Brooks Beast made his debut with a 219 as well. Then the men's mile, we saw Brandon Kidder drop a 358. This is an 800 guy generally. Runs a 358. Kai Robinson of Stanford was in that field running 4 flat. On the women's 3K side, we had openers of two Brooks Beast athletes of Ali Bukowski, who ran an 855. Then Kaylee DeLay, who ran 855 as well, going in hand in hand. And then just a lot of amazing performances on the college and women's side. Juliet Whitaker running a 202.67. Out of all these like season openers, Aaron, which one kind of surprised you or are you most excited about or impressed about going into this indoor season?
I'm just gonna say I'm excited to see Brandon in his new kit with the new team running 219.54 in the 1000. I just think it's interesting, the move to Brooks. They're just a more strength-based program than I think that he's had in the past with Texas A&M or with Coach Bobby down there. So I'm just interested to see how that's going to develop, him working alongside Isaiah, bringing all of that speed that he has. But I think he does have good strength too. Also excited for Craig, 219. I think that's a great opener for him as well. But these are just rust busters. They're so early in the season, so it's hard to really say what's going to come from them. Yeah, 403 for Isaiah.
I think that's what really impresses me. The 403 by Isaiah does impress me, just to show that he's just getting stronger and stronger like each year, and to be able to run a 403 in January, that's pretty impressive. And I think that's impressive.
But Juliet Whitaker, 202.67. That's incredible for the opener of the season. And second place was like 209, 208. So she has a lot left in her. Last year, we know what happened when she fell at USA's. So I think that she's going to really have a lot of motivation going into this year. And I'm excited to just see what she does. That whole entire Stanford team, you know how great they are on that 800 side. So yeah, 202.67 is an incredible opener. I would say that's the best one, honestly.
No, that 202 is fast, especially for January. And I feel like it's crazy to see that Juliet's in college now after interviewing her like 4 years ago at Foot Locker. And it's insane to think that like Mia Brahe Pedersen is still in high school. Like this girl just won't go away. This past weekend at the Virginia Showcase, these high schoolers were just straight wilding. I want to talk specifically about Mia Brahe Pedersen and let Deja Hodge last for around the track. Mia Brahe Pedersen had a day, bro. She had the best double of the weekend, probably. In the 60, she wins it 7:22, a tie for U.S. number 6 all time. In the 200, she ran 22.92, the second or third fastest times ever indoors as well, just considering like if you want to count altitude conversions and stuff like that. But she ran a 7.22 and a 22.92 double. Deja Hodge also ran a 36.97 in the 300 for number 4 all time. But like, Aaron, what do you feel like? What is in most danger in the indoor record books, the 60 meter or the 200 meter? Shanti Jackson has it right now with a 7.16, and then Deja Hodge has it right now in a 22.33. What do you feel like is in most danger after these incredible performances in the second week of January?
Man, it all depends what races Mia is going to be in this year. What pro indoor meets is she going to be racing in? Is she racing at Millrose? I don't know. I'm going to say
I don't know either.
I could see her in some pro fields in that 60. So I'm going to go with the 60 going down. But that 200, I'm going to say the 60. No, I'm going to go with the 60. Mia Brahe Pedersen is going to get the 60.
That would be extremely impressive because I think she is like a 200 runner. I think that's her event. So to see her, but I don't know. It's crazy because Shanti Jackson did that and she opened up in a 52 this past weekend.
I saw that.
And I heard that she ran a 51 split and like she ran 7.16 in the 60. So like these three girls, yeah, that's what she did that in Millrose last year. Like these three girls, Deja Hodge, Mia Brahe Pedersen, and Shanti Jackson are just different. And the fact that Mia and Adesia have one more high school season is completely just insane. I'm excited to see how their season's going to develop. And like, honestly, bro, we're going to keep on reporting on this because like they need the love. Like Adesia and Mia are like, this is the fact that they raced each other this first week out is like, is dope for track and field. I really feel like we're seeing literally best girl sprinters ever.
You're 100% right. And this needs to be a story because we're going to follow them all the way up into the Olympic trials because they're going to be there. I don't know if they're going to. Mia was in the final of the. She was in the final at USA's last year to make it to Worlds. She was in the final. Well, so she made.
Well, Adasia was at Worlds.
That's facts. Because Adasia competed at Worlds last year. That's crazy.
She competed at Worlds. I'm forgetting. Oh, what is it? Not Liberia. Oh my gosh. What is there? What is country?
Is it a Caribbean country?
Yeah. It's a. Oh, British Virgin Islands.
Yeah. So these are generational talents. This is like when we had Noah Lyles and Michael Norman. It's the same thing.
Thanks.
It's the same exact thing. So we're going to keep a close eye on this. We're going to keep on reporting it. And everybody here, remember those names. And remember Mia Bryant-Pettersen. And remember Adasia Hodge. You're going to hear a lot about them the closer that we get to the Olympics. And also you're just going to hear about them because, like Joshua said, they're going to keep on breaking records.
Facts. Like, it's going to be completely insane. Indoor season is just the start. It's just the appetizer for their journey. And we're excited to see really what they do next. And I hope you guys are excited. Hope you guys are hyped for what's coming up next on the podcast. Part two of the Sworn series going into the Olympic trials. Aaron, this week's a little bit shorter episode. You feel me?
A lot of results we have to go through.
Yeah, we're going to dive a little bit more in the Soren story about how he just found the sport of running and what that looked like for him. And honestly, I think people are really going to like this. You're going to really get a peek inside this dude's mental, and it's going to set up to an even better episode the following week, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. I'll keep on saying it. This is one of the most positive, most driven people that I know. And we learn a lot about just who he is at this part of the episode. Just learn about who he is, and it's kind of always who he has been. So, Soren is just a great storyteller, to be honest. He's really funny. So hearing about his high school days, is especially someone you lived with, you ran with and trained with and things like that, it brings everything all together. And like you said, it's going to set up the following episodes very well. So I'm just excited y'all get to get a sneak peek. I mean, y'all get a visual, or you get an audio, whatever, into his story, because I think it can help a lot of people. I think it could inspire a lot of people, give you some drive coming into this new year.
All right, so without further ado, let's take you back to our interview with Sworn G. Boyle as he takes us to really talk about what he was like his first day of track practice or cross country practice, and how he developed this love for running. Would have the Sworn that first started like running, first day of track practice or cross country, would have ever thought that you would be in that position on the line of the Olympic trials and finishing 70th place in the marathon Olympic trials, qualifying for CIM? Like, What were you like first day of track practice, cross country practice, back whenever that was? Take us back.
Man, I wouldn't even say that if you would have told me that my first day of college. But man, just running as a kid, man, everybody knows if you run in, like most people, we don't know about shorts. I was wearing like these baggy Jordan shorts where they between my knees and my freaking calves. I didn't know what shorts were. So these things were baggy. Oh man, you'd have your nice shirt on the first day and you forget. It's like, all right, man, I guess I'm going to have to run my Jordan shirt or something like that. And then I didn't know what reps were. I didn't know what a cool down was. I didn't know what a warm up was. I didn't know what repeats were, man. I just knew just go. I heard cross country. I was like, all right, maybe I'm going to the next city over. That's what cross country is. Man, I didn't even know the terminology, let alone what, who would have thought I would even know, you know, all these, now you got shoes and now we know freaking millimeter stacks, and oh man, that was like a science. So yeah, there's a lot more to running than just one foot in front of the other. I'll tell you that. Thought it was just go hard as you could, and that's what I did in high school. I was like, okay, if I want to be great, just go hard, and I just would run until I couldn't run anymore.
Who brought you out there? Like, because it sounds like you were a basketball player before that. So who was
I was a basketball player, but I was like, man, I'm a skinny guy, and I don't think I'm going to be able to, you know, get down low in the post or, you know, be a little Steph Curry or something like that one of these days. But I was like, you know, this running thing I can do. I like running the mile. I think I can be good at it. I was naturally good at it. So I was like, I don't know. You know, I still love basketball. It's still, to this day, my first love. But I just knew running was just, it just came to me naturally. So I was like, I got to step up on it, you know, on the track and see what I can do, and started in like the sixth grade.
If y'all don't know, Swarin, you're about what? You're like 6'3"?
6'2".
6'2"? Were you that tall? How tall were you in high school? Were you tall and skinny like that when you first
came? Yeah, I've always been skinny. I'm probably the same weight as high school. I'm not even going to lie.
It's crazy.
I've been about the same height, same weight as high school. Cool.
Okay, so someone saw you when you came out.
No, I can
tell. Like, this was a thoroughbred. They knew. You came out 14, 15, 6'2".
Man, I don't even know. My nickname was, my stride's gotten better, but I was known as the gazelle, man.
Baby giraffe.
Baby giraffe, dude, whatever it is. And I had the long legs, and I was just out in the wild.
You said when he came out on the first day of high school practice, bro, you said his coach was salivating. Aaron, he was like, oh, this man about to be nice.
Right here.
It's crazy because I started running with, like, I knew some of the high school guys earlier when I was, like, in 8th and 7th grade. So I was just, like, running. I would just run with them a couple miles. So I was going to, like, Yuba City. I was going to be going to Yuba City High School. So the coach, you know, I've been talking to him for, like, 2 years. Like, I'm excited to come to Yuba City, run with for you guys. Literally 2 weeks before school started my freshman year, I transferred to the rival school.
Wow.
So, and then we went on to win like 3 championships with that other school. But yeah, it was crazy. I was supposed to go to one high school, but I ended up going to a different one like 2 weeks before school started.
So what was your development like in high school? What was your freshman? Did you come out the bat freshman year, varsity? Or did you
No, man. I think my journey's kind of been very similar. Like, I've always started kind of in the bottom. Like, I might have been the top guy at our school, but we came from an area like it's a very agro farm culture area, you know, very high. It is a very diverse area, very big, actually large Indian population. But really, running or athletics isn't really the top priority as it is getting an education. So, an Indian doing running was very, it wasn't common. Same way I could say for the trials, there were very few. Of us, I know of me and Raj really couldn't tell you if there was even any other Indians that made the trials. But what I always knew that I always had was like I always wanted to be the best I could be. I didn't know what that meant, so I'd always push myself. My coach was a good coach, but you know he didn't really like know exactly how to coach me. But he knew like solid what I could do. He'd do his best to coach me. But there was obviously other teams that I noticed were doing much better, or they had groups. Or did tempos where mine was just like every day, all I knew was, okay, practice, go hard, workout, go hard. Long run, and I guess it wasn't even long run, but any run. They say up-tempo pace, that meant fast to me. They said take an easy day, okay, I'm going fast today. So I always gave it everything I had, even though I didn't have like the proper training. Like I worked my way eventually to a 9:27 and a 4:25 in high school. But I started around like a 5:30 my freshman year, and then like, I don't know, 10:17 or something. So
that's a big,
yeah, career. I never was like a 9 flat guy or one of those 4:20s or 4:18s, but I was like, just kind of outside of that.
When you finish with those times in high school, like taking you back to like your senior year, did you finish and you were like, I feel like I have, did you feel like I have so much left, or like, what was just like your reaction? Were you like,
I remember finishing, especially my last race. I think I got 6th in sections, you know, top 3 move on. And it ended, and everything, obviously when something, anything ends like that, it just hits you like, oh, you know, wow, I'm done. High school athletics in my whole life, I'll never have that anymore. But I remember being like, I don't feel like I'm done running. And I knew I was going to college and slow, but I wasn't on the team. I knew I was going to maybe have to try out, and that's a story in itself. But I remember just being like, I'm not ready to let this go. Like I just ran 9:27 I think I ran 9:29 that day. My best was 9:27. So I was only 2 seconds off, but I was like, this is fun. I enjoy this. It pushes myself, and I'm not ready to let this go. And I'm glad I did.
Nah, that's good, because I feel like that's such a, that I coached high school for 2 years, and there's a lot of kids that like, I would be all like, bro, you need to email the school. And like, they wouldn't email the school. And I'm like, and then I'm like, now they're not on a team. Or like now some kids, like they're not on a team yet, but they still want to like keep on running. I'm like, bro, if you would emote them, you'd be on a team. But like some are still running. And I'm all like, it's just such a, it's almost like at times that's like a hard decision to make, to like just try to like, even though you're not on the team, like to keep on trying, to keep on running and try to like make a team. And like, cause it's difficult and like, you don't know where you're going to go, but you really have to have a love for it and want to like keep on going and like to feel like something that you want to, but even it's not even about even just reaching for something. It's just like how you said, you like pushing yourself every single day and it's fun and you love like the grind of it. And that definitely was for you, as we know, like when you're at slow starting off on the club team. I want to go, I think the people need to hear that story of how
this is a B story.
Yeah. So the, just like get you a recap, senior year, I was like looking at colleges. I was like, okay, I want to maybe go to Davis or UCLA or Berkeley. So I applied to those schools. 2 weeks before the deadline comes in for college applications, my math teacher, my calc teacher, he went to San Luis Obispo, OG Cal Poly. Let's get it right for everyone that's wondering which one I'm talking about. He's like, hey man, you like math and science, and you said you want to be an engineer. I was like, yeah. He's like, apply to Cal Poly. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I was like, I get, I think 4 or 5 CSUs I can apply for. And I was like, okay, I'll apply for it. And then I applied for schools. And then obviously the season goes on. It's like February, March, you know, I'm reaching out to local schools like for track, Davis and Chico, and getting nothing back. You know, it's like 9:30 and 4:26 is good, but it's not going to get you a scholarship or someone that they've already probably, at that point, most nowadays people are getting, you know, they already know their teams by November, December. Yeah. So I was really trying to work to anyone give me a chance and didn't hear back. And I was like, then I started thinking, okay, I knew I kind of wanted to go D1. I was like, I want to challenge myself. Like D1 is like where you want to be. And nothing against D2 or D3. Like I said, I applied for Chico. Like I didn't hear back from them. I was like, all right, I don't know any other D2s really that's worth going to. So I was like, education was important to me as well, but I still knew I wanted to run in college. And then I started looking at club teams. I was like, in case I cannot make a D1 team, I want to go to a school that has a good club team. So I started doing research. I was like, all right, Davis has a good club team. But as I got closer to April and May, I was like, oh man, I don't know if I want to stay close to home, because I live in Yuba City, which is like 30 minutes away from Davis. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just like, you know, branch off. And then I looked at St. Louis's club team. I was like, oh, the coach was Armando Securos. Shout out to that man. He's an amazing man. He's the one that let us live together at his house, which is how me and Aaron and all us boys were able to live. Shout out to that man. Great human being. Love that dude. He was the coach. And I was like, oh, he coached Jordan Hussein in high school. So he definitely knows what he's talking about. So I was like, in case I don't make it, I'll have a backup option. Story short is May comes around. I was busy with track. I didn't even look at the school. I knew it had good engineering. It had a good club coach. And I was like, I'm going to Cal Poly. Never went to the campus once. Never looked at it. I didn't even know where it was. I thought the whole time I was thinking it was in Los Angeles.
No.
And then I'm not with you, because I read that there was one in, it was Cal Poly Pomona at the time. I was like, oh wait, I got to in this San Luis. Man, I'm glad I did. But let me tell you, when we went on our orientation, I went there. It was on the June day. I was like, man, it's gonna be hot. It was foggy. It was cold. I get there, man. I come from a diverse area, and I'm telling you, it's like 90. It's like 103% white. No, so I love my white people. I'm telling you, I love my
white people. No, you're not wrong.
I was like, I'm not gonna make it out here.
I said,
I mean, I think I saw one brother on the other side. I was like, man, we gotta stick together if we go here. It was a culture shock. I was like, oh my god, I just messed up the next 4 years of my life. Thank God I chose it, because it was the best 4 years.
Hey, Aaron, this man really had me dying, bro. The fact that he was talking about Cal Poly slow, and I'll never forget when we went on that visit. When we went on that visit, the whole family, we went to San Luis Obispo, and I counted about 5 black people. Like, that's... I'll never forget that. But I love California. Slow is cool though. Slow is cool though.
Nah, it's a beautiful place. But we ain't out there, man. We ain't out there. I remember when I first got out there, I was on a run with Mark Weezar, one of my roommates, my boys. Shout out Mark. And I was like, hey, bro, we got to be good out here. You know, we got to be safe. He's like, no, I think we're going to be good. We're going to be good. Now, this is scary, man. Y'all going to be like, man, that's wild. I was like, he's like, yeah, we're going to be good. We run. We go on our first run. And stop and go to the bathroom. And in the porta potty, somebody wrote on there, Obama baby's down here.
No, bro.
Yes, bruh.
Oh, the first run? Like,
it ain't safe. It ain't safe. It ain't safe. It ain't safe. That was my first run. That's my first run.
That's insane, bro. That's bad. That's bad.
Exactly, yeah. Man. We didn't really get to go deep into swearing about, you know, the experience of being an only, of being Indian there, and how he like transitioned and navigated that world. We didn't really get a chance to go into that, but that is something that is tough. Like, I dealt with that going to Azusa Pacific my first day too. And just like, oh wow. Like, I did not realize how diverse my area was, where I came from. You know what I mean? I was like, I knew people said it was going to be like, you know, a lot of white people, but I didn't know you meant there was going to be no black people. I didn't know that's what you meant. Like, when you said a lot, you mean like zero of any other race. I was like, oh, okay.
And the other thing we didn't really touch on, which probably we missed on in the interview, is that like this dude, he just mentions it for a second, but like I feel like Sworn's story is so, it's like, it's almost, his story is almost above this, because it's like, in a way, but like this dude's the only, like, probably, he doesn't even know, he's like the only Indian American in the U.S. Olympic trials.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only, he said, it's Raj and maybe someone else, I don't even know. Like, that's insane. Like, he runs that.
But that's been his journey and running from the get-go.
Yeah, you know? It's nothing new. It's like...
Exactly. So it is like, I'm not saying it's not a big deal for him, but it's something that he just deals with. And you can probably relate to that. I can relate to that. It's just something that he just deals with. And he's just focused on... I feel like he's just very focused on the goal. And
yeah,
you're not going to let anything get in the way of that. And if it does, he gonna find a way around it, or whatever it is.
No, man, that man was definitely like every mode he had, especially in high school, was go hard. So like, and he's gonna talk about that even a little bit in his college journey a little bit. Like, it was go hard and it was persistence. That's what it was for his college journey. And I can't wait for you guys to hear that story next week on the Two Black Runners podcast. Cause like, bro, we ain't skipping any weeks now. Like, ain't skipping weeks now.
We'll
like,
be back.
Come on, man.
Come on, we'll be here back
next week for another podcast on Two Black Runners. We appreciate y'all for listening this far. Like, for real, for real. Y'all are definitely real ones. We'll see y'all next week on Two Black Runners. Aaron, you got anything else left to say?
Appreciate y'all. If y'all love the podcast, you know, give us a rate, give us a review. And yeah, you really are a real one. You listened this far into the pod, a lot of results that we brought to you today. But we're going to keep it going. We're going to keep it going. Excited to talk to y'all again next Tuesday on a Two Black Tuesday.
All right, man. We'll see y'all. Let's get it.